my country so much manner, like an exasperating friend. Dum 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 dum. Move on, move on. Dum 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 dum. Move on, move on. Now, now, now. I don't believe the nations can be steered. Lead the world with smarts and compassion, by example, not coercion, force and fear. Dum 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 dum. Move on, move on. Dum 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 dum. Move on, move on.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The first wave of layoffs at Lockheed Martin went out this month. 220 employees received notification, and nearly 1,000 additional workers will be laid off by the end of the year. Lockheed Martin will no longer be developing F-16 fighter jets, so less employees are needed. In addition, the Pentagon is considering cuts to their fighter jet program. If that cut is made, it could result in thousands more jobs being lost.
Tax incremental finance districts created nationwide were supposed to kickstart local economies hit by blight by offering tax savings to companies in order to create jobs. But Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First in Washington, D.C., is publishing a book called The Great American Jobs Scam that asserts these TIF districts have been perverted into dumb corporate giveaways that don't create the jobs that were promised.
Well, I'm talking about a system that allows companies to exact huge tax breaks and other kinds of subsidies by talking about creating good jobs, but then a system that allows companies to fail to deliver on the jobs, even though they get the big tax breaks and subsidies.
LeRoy says because TIF requirements have become too relaxed in their definition of blight, they've become a giant ripoff of both taxpayers and workers.
It hurts everybody in the long run because not only are we wasting money, giving money to companies to do things they wanted to do anyway, but we're also spending money in very inefficient, ineffective ways when we need it to be doing other things.
Missouri, LeRoy says, is an especially egregious example of TIFs gone awry. A Republican county executive in Missouri filed a case currently before the state Supreme Court challenging the loose definition of blight after hundreds of acres of cornfields were deemed blighted.
A judge in Wisconsin ruled that prison inmates are not entitled to minimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The suit was filed on behalf of inmates at the Whiteville Correctional Facility in Tennessee. Wisconsin has a contract to send prisoners to that facility. The cafeteria at Whiteville is managed by a private corporation, and lawyers for the inmates argued that because they were being managed by a private company, they should be paid minimum wage. Judge Ken Posner argued that because inmates are not employees of a prison, they are not protected. Posner wrote that people are not imprisoned for the purpose of earning a living. The prison puts them to work to offset prison costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to Gallup, 17% of U.S. workers are actively disengaged, costing U.S. businesses $300 billion a year. Actively disengaged means unhappy workers actively undermining their companies. Another 54% of workers are not engaged, according to Gallup, not putting any real passion into their work. Only 29% of workers, according to Gallup, are truly engaged in their work. But don't blame workers. Gallup finds the cause of this disengagement is lousy managers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Time to take another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. Today's feature, blue jeans. Even the rich like to dress down every now and then, and slipping into a comfy pair of jeans is perfect for puttering around the mansion or driving your Hummer out to pick up some truffles at the gourmet market. But alas, you're rich, and your social class requires that you meet certain standards of attire, so you can't just throw on a pair of common old Levi's like I wear. Sure, you could upgrade to a pair of $150 designer jeans, but, well, they just don't have the panache that a person of your standing demands. Luckily, though, Calvin Stewart has stepped forward with just the jeans for you. The New York-based fashion designer has introduced an exclusive line that he calls APO Jeans. Each pair is made to order, matching a customer's specific measurements, waist, rump, thighs, ankles, and so forth. But that's just the start. APOs are made from a special denim costing $40 a yard, some 20 times the cost of the denim worn by us commoners. Still, denim is denim. What really sets your jeans apart is that Stewart will fully customize them for you, embellishing them with rivets and buttons made of gold, platinum, or other precious metals. We wanted to be the Mercedes-Benz of the denim industry, says Stewart. And so he is, complete with a price tag that starts at $1,000 a pair. To really strut your stuff, however, you might want to pay more than $4,000 a pair and get the ones that have a dozen sparkling diamonds embedded in the front button. You'll also be reassured to know that, in case anyone questions whether your jeans are truly special, Stewart provides a certificate of authenticity, an appraisal, and a born-on date for each pair of APOs. This is Jim Hightower saying, I wonder, can you just toss these things in the washer-dryer? Or do you have to take them to a Mercedes dealer for detailing?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey Mac, the libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Welcome to our program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, visit our archives, articles on democracy, visit the message board, and get into an interesting discussion or debate, as you wish, with the folks there. Lots of interesting things actually on the website. It's fairly substantial. Welcome back to our program. A lot in the news today. Today, the deadliest day so far of all for American forces in Iraq. We will be discussing that in the second hour of our program with a guest who was one of the Republican directors of PR for the RNC, and among other things, and we'll get to that. And in our third hour, by the way, Rama Schneider is going to be filling in for me. I am, wrapping up a little bit of dental work here. No fun, no crisis. So anyhow, third hour of our program. We will have Rama Schneider, who will be filling in for me, and I will be back tomorrow, assuming that my jaw has unnumbed by that time. So, and also tomorrow we will have our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, our regular Thursday afternoon Everything You Know Is Wrong. We're going to have on an author who's suggesting that we are on the verge of societal collapse. should be entertaining. Regulatory studies for the Cato Institute, editor of Regulation Magazine. He served as a senior economist for the Joint Economic Committee of the U.S. Congress, director of the Center for International Economic Growth at the Heritage Foundation. He's with the Objectivist Center. That's www.objectivistcenter.org. And he recently wrote a piece for the Monthly Planet suggesting that maybe we should deregulate the pharmaceutical industry. Ed, welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm great, but I'll get better. Why do the big drug companies and their paid spokespeople want to prevent we the people, through our representative government, from ensuring that our drug supply is safe?
Well, I don't know that that's exactly what they want to do. I think you have to step back and look at the whole question of both two things, safety and efficacy of drugs, and ask the question in that context, okay? And here's the thing. Right now we have a Food and Drug Administration, a government agency, that is tasked with certifying two things. One, the safety of products, that you're not going to drop dead from using it, or if you, you know, what effects it might have, adverse effects on certain groups and so forth.
Right.
And two, the efficacy of the product.
Right.
In other words, does it work? I mean, a sugar cube, is safe. It's not going to necessarily cure the common cold, right?
Well,
so
yeah.
That's what they're trying to do.
Setting aside the placebo effect, sure. Now, but see, here in your article, you talk about, you start out with Bill Gates and Paul Allen. You say they founded Microsoft, and isn't this great what they did? They did it because of an absence of government regulation, and that there are no billionaires, in the biotechnology field. Obviously, there are many billionaire corporations in the biotechnology field. Monsanto is probably the largest, so I think that's a little disingenuous. But anyhow, you suggest that government regulation in pharmaceuticals is somehow the same thing, or deregulation of pharmaceuticals would be somehow the same thing as regulating or deregulating the computer industry. The last time I looked, my computer couldn't kill me. But the last time I looked, somewhere between 40 and 140,000 people died from Vioxx, and we've got this guy from the Food and Drug Administration, Stephen Graham, testifying before Congress that the reason why those people died was because Merck knew about this, but they were covering it up because there was so much corporate influence inside the FDA. You're arguing now for more corporate influence in the FDA.
No,
why?
I'm arguing something even more radical.
Okay.
I am arguing that there shouldn't be a government Food and Drug Administration.
You're arguing to do it away with the FDA altogether.
Yep.
Okay.
And, or I'll give you a number two alternative, okay?
All right.
But let me give you the first reason.
Sure.
There are two fundamental problems or dangers that you can have with pharmaceuticals. One is that a product could be dangerous to you or to a certain group, okay? And I mean, there are people who have allergies to certain things. One of my brothers can't eat wheat. There are people who are allergic to peanuts.
Yeah, so I can't
while
eat wheat
something
either,
might be great for the vast, vast majority of people, it might be dangerous for some.
Sure.
But here's the other problem. Dr. Louis Lasagna from Tufts University, Center for Study of Drug Development, estimated that 119,000 Americans died of heart problems during the period when beta blockers were being tested for efficacy. We might not have been able to save all of those lives, but there's 119,000 Americans. Another group found that something like 25,000 Americans died of kidney cancer when the drug interleukin-2 was being tested because of FDA.
But these are still
delay.
Smaller. These are still smaller numbers than the number of people who've died from Vioxx.
Here's the point. First of all, the Vioxx numbers are still we're still trying to figure out what they are. Okay, they're still open to question. What I'm doing, and I could spend the rest of the hour going down the list here.
Yeah, but we're not going to
of people who die or who suffer needlessly because on average now it takes about 10 years to get a new product to market. And it costs the numbers fluctuate depending on how you calculate, but it's in the vicinity of $800 million to bring a new product to market. The point is, incredible adverse effects of the government agency that is supposed to be certifying the products that that are to save our lives and make us suffer less.
So in other words, your argument is because it takes a couple of years to do the kind of double blind crossover, placebo-controlled studies that will tell us whether or not something will kill us or not, or whether it has long-term effects.
The killing part.
That we should
usually the
Well, let's talk about the side effects then. You know, whether it'll cause birth defects or whatever, because it takes a couple of years to find out whether something is going to do that, and in some cases it might take a decade to find out whether it's mutogenic or carcinogenic. Therefore, we should simply stop looking for those things and just trust the American corporations.
What I'm saying is this: and by the way, this whole issue has come up because a lot of AIDS patients have said, "Hey, look, it's wonderful that you're going to take all of this time, but guess what? I'm going to be dead. So maybe you should make an exception for us AIDS patients."
And they are. Okay? They are. They're fast-tracking those drugs. They're doing that.
What I'm saying is this. There are people who have heart problems who would say, can't we make an exception for us? Kidney problems. People who are going to be dead.
Hey, there were people who had arthritis and said, hey, give us something quick, and they gave them Vioxx.
Okay, but here's what I suggest. Government regulation tends not to work very well. There are incredible
downsides. How can you say that, Ed?
Wait
a second, Ed. Just let me stop you right there. How can you say that? We have, in the United States right now, probably one of the cleanest food supplies in the world because of government regulation. We have the best water in the world because of government regulation. We don't have sewage contaminating our rivers because of government regulation.
Let me on for another show, and we can talk about those issues. But let me just give you the alternative to an FDA. One alternative would be the underwriter's laboratory model. I'm sitting here looking at the bottom of my coffee maker on my desk, and there's a little UL. What does that mean? It means that an independent laboratory has certified that if I use this coffee maker the way it's supposed to be used, it's not going to blow up on me or kill me or anything like that.
The thing that you're missing here, though, Ed, is that underwriter's laboratories will not participate in certifying that products are good if those products have a high risk for killing people, for causing death,
because there are
liability issues associated with that.
No,
regulation brings immunity from liability.
Well, you see, this is the problem. Government brings immunity from liability. And I don't believe in immunity from liability, by the way. I believe that if a manufacturer does intentionally and negligently put out something without telling people that it's going to kill them or make them sick, that I think they should be liable. But
then you're saying there should be regulations.
No. Not
well, you just detailed a regulation, didn't you?
Having regulations, that is where you have to go through the government hoops, and having good tort law. Now, let me give you another example.
Let me just get this clear. You're suggesting that the way that we should find out whether or not a drug is going to kill us is because somebody sued the drug company successfully?
No. It is the same way I'm using this underwriter's laboratory model. Let us say I am, actually,
using the underwriter
way than us.
Go ahead.
The Europeans right now have a system of private certification. Now, the governments in most of these countries will, as it were, certify the certifiers, okay? But the companies in Europe, and I know especially Switzerland, actually will shop for a company or a certifier that knows their products and so forth that are going to certify the products in the quickest time and yet make sure that they're safe. And there's no indication that system that they're using in Europe, which is kind of a partial competition system, has any serious defects.
To the best of my knowledge, though, Ed, the European system is a system of government regulation. It does involve substantial government regulation.
No, the European system.
Or let's say government oversight. Would you agree with that?
I would say government oversight in this way. The government will certify the laboratories. Now, I don't think you necessarily even have to do that, but let's say, fine, the government will certify that this is a credible laboratory, that it's not a bunch of fly-by-night quacks or whatever, right? Okay. And then the companies can go to the, and I'm thinking especially of Switzerland, can go to the laboratory that they think is best to handle their product. And by the way, I want to get insurance companies into this picture, too.
So spread the profit around, huh?
Uh-huh.
Here's the question, Ed.
Profits made by people who produce goods and services.
I understand.
That we help us.
I understand. And people who want to know more about that can go to ObjectivistCenter.org and learn all about it. So it's suggesting is that the FDA, which is a not-for-profit organization where we have basically boring bureaucrats who are not making – nobody there is making a $200 million a year CEO salary. They don't have jets that fly around with gold-plated bathrooms, and they don't have big corporate headquarters, that we should replace them with one of these private corporations, for-profit corporations like
you're
suggesting.
Well, not necessarily one private corporation. There would be, I think, they could be
many
competing
of them.
Private.
Let remember, lots right of them
now,
get into the act.
The FDA doesn't actually test anything. The FDA doesn't actually have men in white coats, you know, running around laboratories for the most part. The FDA certifies.
Right, so we're doing the same thing the Swiss are doing.
There's a difference, and that has to do, as you correctly point out, by the way, with the liability issue. And because you allow the Swiss use a competitive system of private laboratories, they get the product out on the market a lot quicker, and yet they still get them out safer. And by the way, I said I wanted to bring the insurance companies in.
We've got about 30 seconds, Ed. Go ahead.
Basically, insurance companies are not going to, if they're fully liable, the insurance companies are not going to insure a product or a laboratory if there are questions, any more than, because that's what their reputation is based on.
Yeah.
Just like Underwriters Laboratory.
Interesting. So okay, great.
I'm sorry, we've
run out of time here, but you know, I think you made your point, you made it well, I appreciate it. ObjectivistCenter.org, the website, Edward Hudgens, former director of regulatory for the Cato Institute, director, editor of Regulation Magazine with the Objectivist Center. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about Democratic.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack and offices. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Taking care of business here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Welcome back.
Good morning and ignore the global warming. Head out to the Oval Office, start my day.
It's George's business.
My donors all protected so I can be re-elected. Give them access just as long as they pay.
Yes, indeed.
And to the corporate crooks who keep cooking up the books, we make sure we look the other way. The laws are theirs to break, long as I still get my take. My war chest keeps on growing each day. And I've been taking care of business every day.
Yes, the official mantra of the Bush administration. Taking care of business, putting business first. And as I've said many times, as and myself, as all in favor of business. I am just not in favor in the United States. We even have no problem with the large business in the United States, so long as they don't insert themselves into the business of governance. And not only are they now by corporate lobbyists and corporate attorneys, this is not right. This is not American. This is Tim in our chat room, actually. Thank you for this, Tim. We keep track of what's going on while we're on the air as well, but nonetheless, the Senate confirms Rice, 85-13, with no votes from Boxer, Kennedy, Levin, Byrd, Kerry, Jeffords, Reed. That's interesting. Oh, Reed of Rhode Island. Durbin, Dayton, Akaka? It must be Obama. Oh, that's because he's your senator, right? You don't like, you're not happy with him. By Lautenberg and Harkin. Thank you, Tim. And throwing a little bomb in there for me to read on the air. I love it. Vioxx may have caused 140. Yeah, let's take a few phone calls on this thing. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. Options, right? It's like you're going one way or the other, right?
Underwriter Laboratories do something. Just because the FDA right now is mainly the governance is provided by people appointed by the current president. So the current FDA administration is very biased toward the drug industry and therefore, you know, fast-tracking a lot of these things that aren't tested.
Yeah. But well, the point that he made is that essentially the FDA that we have right now is that underwriter's laboratory. It's just not profitable to anybody.
Yes, but I also think that, I mean, the point that I think he's missing is that, and what you brought up especially, is that an underwriter laboratory, to do the proper job, they're still going to have to test these drugs for 2, 5, or 10 years.
Oh, sure.
To really understand what the system is.
But think of all the money they can make while they're doing it. See, this is the reason why it's important to listen to these guys from the Objectivist Institute and from the Ayn Rand folks, is that they represent the philosophical underpinnings of the conservative movement in the United States that is not talked about out loud, but all the conservatives understand, you know, front, back, top, right, you know, top to bottom, the whole thing. This is the foundation. This is the core philosophy of everything from Limbaugh to Bush. I mean, the whole spectrum. And that is that government, as Ronald Reagan said in his first inaugural address, government is not going to solve the problem. Government is the problem. That's their view, that we, the people, collectively, is some sort of evil entity. And
yeah,
that private enterprise, private corporations, run by a small, elite, wealthy few, are the solution to the problem. And I'm sorry, I reject that. I recognize the government can be a problem, the Soviet Union, great case in point, but our government democracy.
Yeah, but, you know, I think if you want to really reform the drug industry, and nobody's really said this, it's just like, you know, you can't put Jack Daniels on a TV ad.
Yeah.
Stop all the stupid, you know,
the drug advertisements,
advertising, and everything else. I mean,
yeah,
if you look at 20 years ago,
Mike, I'm sorry, we're out of time.
I gotta
end this, but I agree with you, and you're right. 20 years ago, they couldn't advertise those things, and they're doing it now, and it ain't right. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The first wave of layoffs at Lockheed Martin went out this month. 220 employees received notification, and nearly 1,000 additional workers will be laid off by the end of the year. Lockheed Martin will no longer be developing F-16 fighter jets, so less employees are needed. In addition, the Pentagon is considering cuts to the Raptor fighter jet program. If that cut is made, it could result in thousands more jobs being lost.
Tax incremental finance districts created nationwide were supposed to kickstart local economies hit by blight by offering tax savings to companies in order to create jobs. But Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First in Washington, D.C. is publishing a book called The Great American Jobs Scam that asserts these TIF districts have been perverted into dumb corporate giveaways that don't create the jobs that were promised.
Well, I'm talking about a system that allows companies to exact huge tax breaks and other kinds of subsidies by talking about creating good jobs, but then a system that allows companies to fail to deliver on the jobs, even though they get the big tax breaks and subsidies.
LeRoy says because TIF requirements have become too relaxed in their definition of blight, they've become a giant ripoff of both taxpayers and workers.
It hurts everybody in the long run because not only are we wasting money, giving money to companies to do things they wanted to do anyway, but we're also spending money in very inefficient, ineffective ways when we need it to be doing other things.
Missouri, LeRoy says, is an especially egregious example of TIFs gone awry. A Republican county executive in Missouri filed a case currently before the state Supreme Court challenging the loose definition of blight after hundreds of acres of cornfields were deemed blighted.
A judge in Wisconsin ruled that prison inmates are not entitled to minimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The suit was filed on behalf of inmates at the Whiteville Correctional Facility in Tennessee. Wisconsin has a contract to send prisoners to that facility. The cafeteria at Whiteville is managed by a private corporation, and lawyers for the inmates argued that because they were being managed by a private company, they should be paid minimum wage. Judge Ken Posner argued that because inmates are not employees of a prison, they are not protected. Posner wrote that people are not imprisoned for the purpose of earning a living. The prison puts them to work to offset prison costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to Gallup, 17% of U.S. workers are actively disengaged, costing U.S. businesses $300 billion a year. Actively disengaged means unhappy workers actively undermining their companies. Another 54% of workers are not engaged, according to Gallup, not putting any real passion into their work. Only 29% of workers, according to Gallup, are truly engaged in their work. But don't blame workers. Gallup finds the cause of this disengagement is lousy managers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. See, I think the point that Mike in Pennsylvania was making, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I suspect that where he was going is, and I agree with him, is, or with you, Mike, no longer on the line, but is that our governmental functions are being corrupted. are being corrupted by the Bush administration and past administrations. I mean, there was no shortage of this stuff during the Clinton administration as well, although it took different forms by and large. But here now, I mean, it's like Ann Veneman from the Cattlemen's Association being put in charge of the U.S. Department of Agriculture that oversees the Cattlemen's Association. It just goes on and on. You know, we've got a guy, an insurance industry mogul, being made head of HHS that administers Medicare, which is an insurance. And here at the EPA, the following, this is from Ed Hopkins, the environmental quality director of the Sierra Club. The following is a statement on the EPA's signing today of a deal that exempts factory farms from pollution requirements under the Clean Air Act and the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act. That's a mouthful. Anyhow, here's the bottom line, Ed Hopkins says it fairly well. He says, and I quote, "The deal signed," now this was last week, "the deal signed by the Bush administration lets the meat industry off the hook for air pollution and reporting toxic releases from factory farms. Rural families have been suffering from this pollution for years, and now they will have to wait until at least 2011 for relief. Instead of forcing polluters to clean up their act, the Bush administration has given them a get-out-of-jail-free card. This is an agreement of the polluters, by the polluters, and for the polluters. Last year, leaked documents revealed that this deal was crafted behind closed doors by industry lobbyists. While the public was left in the dark, the Bush administration repeatedly denied that any such negotiations were taking place until the EPA's own documents proved otherwise. The largest corporations in the livestock industry," he goes on, "are being let off the hook in exchange for agreeing to, quote, study, end quote, their air pollution and paying small fees. Under this deal, the companies are not actually required to reduce any harmful pollution, and it does nothing to protect the health of neighbors and their children." And he wraps it up saying, "This is another example of the Bush administration striking deals behind closed doors, whether it's Vice President's secret energy task force, power companies being allowed to draft rules on toxic mercury, or this new deal with the meat industry. It's clear that this administration is putting polluters before the public." And as we learned, you know, they're also putting pharmaceutical company profits ahead of public interest. Bloomberg News reporting this week, Merck and Company's Vioxx painkiller may have caused as many as 140,000 heart attacks in the U.S. before it was withdrawn September 30th, Food and Drug Safety reviewer David Graham said in a study published today online. Now, this is the study that Graham said he was not allowed to publish. Why? Because there's this revolving door policy going on in these organizations. We used to have a firewall. There used to be a firewall. This is all the stuff that started to break down when Reagan came in, and deregulation became the mantra. There used to be this firewall that if you worked for a government agency, you could not then go into that industry that was regulated for a certain number of years, and or vice versa. You couldn't come out of a regulated industry. You couldn't have a situation like we had with Thomas Scully, I believe his name was, who came out of he was the head of the Association of Private Hospitals, the group that, you know, the Bill Frist's family, billionaires as a result of the privatization of the hospital industry. He was the head of this trade association, quit this huge cushy job to become a bureaucrat with the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, why would he do that? Why would he take this huge step down? Well, it turns out that he turned out to be the guy who wrote the Medicare plan that the Bush administration pushed through Congress that said it's illegal for the government to negotiate best prices with drug companies for Medicare. Medicare being the largest purchaser of drugs in the United States, maybe in the world. So they all had to be bought at retail. What does this mean? $300-400 billion in profits for the pharmaceutical industry. And then as soon as this law passes, this guy gets a pass. He gets an exemption from the Bush administration, special exemption. Lets him leave and go back and become a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. What has gone wrong? And then the conservatives come along and say, we need to take it even farther. Let's just do away with these government agencies. They're not working after all. See, it's the same. It's the starve the beast philosophy. They say, well, you know, the government's in debt. It's terrible. We're in a horrible financial crisis. Therefore, let's slash Pell Grants to the schools. Let's do away with assistance to families who are on hard time. It gets cut. Let's get rid of these unemployment benefits. What is this nonsense? What? We're Medicaid. It's socialism. Get rid of it all. And we don't have the money anyway. Well, why don't we have the money? Well, because we had to give tax cuts to the rich. You starve the beast, and then you say, hey, the beast doesn't have any money. It's very simple. Very simple. No secrets here. They're doing it. It's not like it's a vast right-wing conspiracy. They're doing it all right out in the open. It's just that most Americans don't notice. 22 minutes before the hour. Let's go back to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Patrick in Orlando, Florida on the line. Hey, Patrick, what's on your mind today?
That last guy right there is pure fascism if I've ever seen it. These people want to turn over our entire processes that have kept, like you said, this country with the top quality and turn it over to a private organization, which is going to leave it wide open to corruption. I mean, they've already sold out our government. Like you just said, they're starving the beast. Thank God for your show that you have these people on there so people can see how crazy these people are.
Yeah, we really need to. And I treat them respectfully. I respect that the fact that these guys actually have an ideology that they really and truly believe. I believe that Ed is not just some, you know, high paid shill. I think he really believes this stuff.
Yeah,
they're true believers. They're idealists.
Exactly.
And God save us from the true believers. It's Osama bin Laden is a true believer too. We just have to keep that in mind. You know?
Yeah, they got to realize that the extreme part of anything is not the way to go.
Yeah, which is not to say, by the way, that these guys are like Osama bin Laden. I didn't mean to imply that, but it's the good point. Here's a question for you, Patrick. What are you going to do about this?
I vote.
There you go.
And I was a former small business owner, and I'm in Florida, and I've closed my doors pretty much ever since the plane hit because our government doesn't want to enforce border patrols. I can't compete with illegal labor.
Yeah.
And yet these huge corporations are getting these tax breaks, and I can't even, I can't even just bid a job.
Yeah, no, you've got to be a multinational corporation. You got to be a Walmart to get billions and billions in tax breaks.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, they're talking about, these agencies like the FDA doesn't have the time it's taken so long to certify these drugs. Well, if the corporations paid their fair share of tax, there'd be more than enough money to staff the FDA, and it could run in a whole lot smoother and quicker process.
Yeah, I know, but we got to starve the beast. Patrick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Lee in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. I would like to speak to you about the mandatory universal participation in Social Security. About 4 weeks ago, I spoke with you and Congressman Sanders. I did not like Congressman Sanders' answer, although I think he gave what he could. In effect, he said there had been some talk about that. I write my congressman, Jerry Costello.
Hey, hang on just a second here, Lee. Mandatory participation, you're talking about like members of Congress having to participate in Social Security?
No, I know they say. I'm speaking of like in Illinois, the state, the teacher's retirement system, the university retirement system. We also have the General Assembly.
Lee, you're not going to get any disagreement from me. I'm sorry.
Okay, what I'm wanting to ask you is, do you think the progressive wing, which gives a lot of writings to the Social Security system, I never see anything about mandatory universal participation. And
yeah,
I think the reason it is because these groups are represented in Congress, and none of them would want to take a 6.2% decrease in their wages.
Yeah, it could be. I just have to say, Lee, I honestly don't know. And you're right. I haven't seen a lot of discussion about this in the progressive side. And I have to say, I am not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm not sure that I could really call myself a liberal or a conservative. There are some things like, I think we should have a balanced budget. Well, through most of my lifetime, that meant you were a conservative. I think that we should have well-funded social programs and a good social safety net. I think it's outrageous that in one of the richest countries in the world, literally hungry. There is hunger in America. I mean, literally millions of people. This is just, it's off the rails for me. Yeah, you're not going to get knee-jerk responses here, I'm sorry. Peter in New York is on the line. Hey, Peter, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
I've never been on the radio before, so love your show.
Well, I'm glad you called, and it's painless, isn't it?
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, what's up?
I wanted to comment about the guy you had on your show earlier wanted to do away with the FDA.
Right.
I forgot his name.
Yeah, Ed.
Currently doing a bit of writing about the war on drugs through Hysteria. I was wondering if he knows exactly what it was like before the Pure Food and Drug Act was passed in this country.
I suspect he doesn't. You know, and if he had only wanted to be on for 20 minutes, if I'd had him on longer, people were traveling around from town to town. You know, they used to call him a snake oil salesman.
Right. And passing their patent medicines,
yeah. And
50% morphine.
That's right. The most common ingredient in these compounds were either opiates or coca derivatives. In fact, in the 1920s, they took the cocaine out of Coca-Cola finally. It was originally one of those things and replaced it with caffeine. I don't know if he knows his history or not, but I can tell you, you know, I do and you do, and I think most Americans just kind of have a gut sense that it's appropriate that we the people protect ourselves. Thanks.
Definitely.
Thanks a lot for the call, Peter. Good to hear from you. I mean, here's the bottom line. In a small society, I mean, I live in a small town here in the People's Republic of Vermont, for example. This is why I have to take the third hour off from the show to go get dental work done, because it's 9,000 people in this town. I mean, how many dentists do you have, right? So, you take what you can get by way of appointments, and the dentist doesn't work after 4 o'clock. I mean, what? Anyhow, that's kind of the downside of it. The upside of it is we had a doctor in this town who was he had gotten into his own stuff, you know, his own pharmaceutical. This was about 4 or 5 years ago. And apparently he was addicted to painkillers. He was shooting up his own stuff, you know. And he started making really bad mistakes and hurting people. And boom, everybody in town knew about it in a matter of months. I mean, everybody in town knew about it. And this guy, you know, and people came forward and they talked about it. And it was in the newspaper every day. And it was like, you know, people talked about it in town. It was a big story. I mean, this is a little tiny state. We have lost more people in Iraq than we have lost to murders this year, I believe. We've had 7 people die in Iraq. And I think we've only had 2 or 3 murders. In any case, the point is that in a small community, we can figure out who the dangerous ones among us are. But try doing that in New York City. Or try doing that with a company that does business nationally. I mean, this is the cornerstone of the con argument, the conservative argument, is that, well, you know, it'll all balance out. People will figure out when there's a bad product. People will figure out when there's a dangerous product. No, I'm sorry. P.T. Barnum was right. There's a sucker born every minute. And it's not in that. It's that when society gets a little bit larger than a little town of 8,900 people like I live in, then you've got a situation, even though this is the state capital, this is the smallest state capital in the United States, the only one, by the way, without a McDonald's. Regularly you see the ballot initiative, you know, we have to vote to tax ourselves, to pay the attorney, to fight the lawsuit, you know, but that's a whole other thing. Anyhow, when you have a larger community or larger, like, national issues, we can't all spend all the time getting ourselves informed about what are the dangerous drugs, who are the dangerous doctors. So what we do collectively is we say we are going to have some of us look out for the rest of us, and we're going to appoint those people, and we're going to appoint them by virtue of our say-so, that is, by our vote, we're going to elect people to do that. And conservatives don't like that. They say, hey, you know, why should government do that for free? I mean, not for free. Obviously, we're paying for it with our taxes, but nobody's making any money on it other than the salaries. I mean, there's just salaries here. There's profits to be made. And you know, dividends now, you only pay 15% income tax on dividends. So, you know, folks who want to have more dividend income, gee, let's have more I'm on a rant here. Charles in New York is on the line. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind?
Hey, it's your favorite Capital Region caller.
Okay.
By the way, Mazel Tov on, what was the Central Vermont station, WDEV.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Aside from the fact that I once took Vioxx and Bextra and currently take Celebrex, and I'm only 27, and I recall when I was in college 8 years ago when the Senate voted to, you know, ease the restrictions on the FDA, the analogies this guy was using, and I always love it when they say, well, let's try it this way or let's try it that way. Whenever you have one private company trying to find a supportive organization that is commercial and give a profit to help them out.
Right.
I think of Arthur Anderson.
Yeah, there you go. You know, helping us know that Enron is doing everything appropriate, friends. Your pension funds are safe, not to worry. And then Ken Lay meeting with Arnold Schwarzenegger a year before he's even talking about being governor in private at the Beverly Hills Hotel at the height of the California energy crisis. And we still don't know what that was about. Incredible. Charles, do you have arthritis?
I do, actually.
Pardon my asking.
I injured my back. I was doing some plumbing. And I thought I was stronger than I actually was.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I wish you well on that. Charles, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you there in New York. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison. Not some right-wing think tank or the RNC or even the Ayn Rand folks. Well, we'll argue with them, I suppose. We'll be right back.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com. LIN-HOLLERS.com.
The state of Washington lists killer whales as endangered species. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In Washington's Puget Sound has been declining, and the population dropped nearly 20% in a matter of only 5 years. That dramatic fall prompted the state of Washington to list these killer whales as an endangered species last April. Federal officials are now proposing a similar action. Harriet Allen is the endangered species manager with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. She says it's the job of each state to monitor and protect animals that live in its borders. If a species starts to decline rapidly, the state can list the species as endangered to alert the public and the federal government that the population is in trouble.
the important thing about our lists are the raising of recovery actions for those gone. Another is contaminants. They're among the most heavily contaminated marine mammals in the world. And then third is the unknown impacts and increase in whale watching and vessel traffic.
Allen says this population of killer whales in Puget Sound use marine waters in the United States and Canada. The Canadian government has listed this group of killer whales as endangered. Federal authorities in the United States proposed a similar listing in December. A final ruling might be made at the end of this year. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It turns out I was misinformed. There actually is a Senator Akaka from Hawaii, Daniel Akaka, and he voted not to confirm Condoleezza Rice, and I had thought Tim was making... something new every day. And I thought I knew all about politics. My apologies, Senator Akaka, and to Tim. He points out that Senator Obama actually voted to confirm Condi Rice, this being, in Tim's opinion, his third sellout of the people of the state of Illinois so far since he became their United States Senator. Anyhow, Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. He has some thoughts on the issues of the day. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I happened to watch, Bush had a news conference earlier.
Right.
I watched the whole thing, and, Bush sort of did his standard, performance sometimes, basically not answering questions.
Right.
Like,
I saw a piece of it. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
What was most interesting was maybe a third of the questions from the reporters were these, I don't know who these reporters were, they weren't any people I recognized. But they were questions which seemingly could have been written by Karl Rove.
This is what has happened, Paul. I mean, and this is the horror of what has happened is that they have so terrified the press corps that they get nothing but softballs. And they've also figured out, and now they've gone to assigned seating. You have the seat in chair number 3 on row number 4, and so they know who's sitting where, and they call on the people that they want to call on. This is an administration that's absolutely managing the news. Spike in Easton, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Spike, what's up?
Hey, real quick, because I know you're almost out of time for this hour.
Yeah, we've got about a minute.
I was just wondering if anyone else has seen the similarities with our occupation in Iraq with the British Empire bringing democracy and rule to Northern Ireland, and we're more or less having the exact same effects from that.
You want a better analogy? How about the British Empire bringing democracy to Iraq back in 1919, after the fall of the Ottoman Empire at the end of World War One? I mean, the British went through the same thing we're going through.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it ironic? The only person that's helping us is the Brits.
Yeah, they apparently are forgetting the lessons of history. Actually, the British people remember the lessons of history. But Tony Blair was, not quite. Apparently, when he was at Eton, he wasn't paying attention. So.
Well, also, there's a great book. It's not a very liberal writer, Pat Buchanan, but it's got a very good point to the book.
Where the Right Went Wrong. I read that book just before the election. And came on the air and said, here's a book written by a conservative Republican, and the only bad part about it is the last chapter, which is just openly partisan. But he just completely deconstructs George W. Bush and the neocon thing. Where the Right Went Wrong by Pat Buchanan. It's actually a book I recommend, if that's what you're talking about, Spike, was it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
I even read his magazine, even though I don't always agree with him.
Yeah,
he has great points at times.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, although at the same time, in my opinion, the guy's a racist anti-Semite, and I've got some problems with Pat Buchanan, but occasionally he hits it spot on. Spike, thanks a lot for the call. It's Tom Hartman, exposing the con and conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The first wave of layoffs at Lockheed Martin went out this month. 220 employees received notification, and nearly 1,000 additional workers will be laid off by the end of the year. Lockheed Martin will no longer be developing F-16 fighter jets, so less employees are needed. In addition, the Pentagon is considering cuts to the Raptor fighter jet program. If that cut is made, it could result in thousands more jobs being lost.
Tax incremental finance districts created nationwide were supposed to kickstart local economies hit by blight by offering tax savings to companies in order to create jobs. But Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First in Washington, D.C. is publishing a book called The Great American Jobs Scam that asserts these TIF districts have been perverted into dumb corporate giveaways that don't create the jobs that were promised.
Well, I'm talking about a system that allows companies to exact huge tax breaks and other kinds of subsidies by talking about creating good jobs, but then a system that allows companies to fail to deliver on the jobs, even though they get the big tax breaks and subsidies.
LeRoy says because TIF requirements have become too relaxed in their definition of blight, they've become a giant ripoff of both taxpayers and workers.
It hurts everybody in the long run because not only are we wasting money, giving money to companies to do things they wanted to do anyway, but we're also spending money in very inefficient, ineffective ways when we need it to be doing other things.
Missouri, LeRoy says, is an especially egregious example of TIFs gone awry. A Republican county executive in Missouri filed a case currently before the state Supreme Court challenging the loose definition of blight after hundreds of acres of cornfields were deemed blighted.
A judge in Wisconsin ruled that prison inmates are not entitled to minimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The suit was filed on behalf of inmates at the Whiteville Correctional Facility in Tennessee. Wisconsin has a contract to send prisoners to that facility. The cafeteria at Whiteville is managed by a private corporation, and lawyers for the inmates argued that because they were being managed by a private company, they should be paid minimum wage. Judge Ken Posner argued that because inmates are not employees of a prison, they are not protected. Posner wrote that people are not imprisoned for the purpose of earning a living. The prison puts them to work to offset prison costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to Gallup, 17% of U.S. workers are active aged, costing U.S. businesses $300 billion. Another 54% of workers are not engaged, according to Gallup, not putting any real passion into their work. Only 29% of workers, according to Gallup, are truly engaged in their work. But don't blame workers. Gallup finds the cause of this disengagement is lousy managers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
At George W.'s recent National Economic Conference, an entire session was devoted to bashing trial lawyers. And what a rollicking good time it was. A panel of corporate interests wowed the hand-picked audience of Bush partisans with jabs at the lawyers who try to hold wrongdoing corporations accountable to those of us who are harmed. George himself nodded and chuckled as panelists cried about people who sue these business empires. For example, Home Depot CEO Bob Nardelli, a Fat Cat Bush donor, was there, wailing that his $64 billion a year retailing Goliath is a target for pesky consumers and their lawyers. "You've got deep pockets colliding with shallow principles," Bob snorted, drawing guffaws from an appreciative George who is demanding that Congress limit the rights of consumers to bring lawsuits against the Home Depots. Missing from Bush's Bash Fest was Mary Pinturf. Even if invited, though, she wouldn't have come since, well, she's dead. Her head was crushed by a 75-pound box that fell from one of Home Depot's high-stack shelves. Nor could Janessa Horner be there to testify. This 3-year-old's body was shattered by wood fragments when more than a ton of kitchen countertops fell 10 feet from a Home Depot forklift, splitting a main blood vessel in Janessa's brain. She died 4 hours later. Nardelli tries to keep secret the number of people killed or maimed by Home Depot, which has been labeled the most dangerous store in America. But it's known that in 1 year alone, they were getting 185 injury claims per week. Why doesn't Bob do something about it? Because it's more profitable for him to settle with the families than to change the dangerous way his stores operate. This is Jim Hightower saying, and it's even more profitable for him to back his buddy Bush, who will then push a law to keep families like Mary Pinturf's and Janessa Horner's from suing Home Depot for their loss, pain, and suffering.
A message from the American Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from a man I went door to door for when I was 13 years old. I worked on his political campaign. In my heart, I knew he was right. He said, "Religious factions will go on imposing their will on others unless the decent people connected to them recognize that religion has no place in public policy. They must learn to make their views known without trying to make their views the only alternatives." Barry Goldwater. Well, welcome back to the program. Yeah, I still actually have a lot of respect for Barry Goldwater. Welcome back to the program. Today, the deadliest day in Iraq so far. We just had this tragic helicopter accident, 31 Marines. We don't know if it was an accident or if they were shot down. I guess the story is still coming in. The news is still coming in. And perhaps an auspicious time, this also, the day after an article was published in the Stars and Stripes, the European and Pacific edition of the Stars and Stripes, signed by 13 retired generals, let's see, Army Brigadier General, Army Brigadier General, Navy Vice Admiral, Navy Rear Admiral, Marine General, Navy Rear Admiral, Army Lieutenant General, Air Force General, Major General, Army General. These are all, you know, stars on their shoulders. As retired professional military leaders, the U.S. Armed Forces deeply concerned about what's going on in the Bush administration, Gonzalez and whatnot, his views concerning the role of the Geneva Convention's U.S. detention interrogation policy, put soldiers in harm's way. The Bush administration policies fostered greater animosity toward the United States around the world, undermined our intelligence gathering efforts, added to the risks facing our troops serving around the world. I think it's a good time to ask the question, how many dead Americans, how many billions of American dollars are an appropriate price to pay for Democracy in Iraq. Scott Hodgson, Hoganson, is that right? Stands for three Republican National Conventions. And you just wrote a piece, which I thought was actually quite thoughtful, for your CNSnews.com website, Breaking Iraq's Cycle of Bloody Rule. And
I think it's a transfer back just about as far as history can record. It has been one that is marked by extreme violence, by assassination, by overthrows and coups and so on and so forth. And if Iraq, and I believe they certainly can, actually hold a free and fair election and work towards, you know, representative democracy by taking these first the American or French revolutions of the 18th century, it was a displeasure with the monarchy.
And you know what caused that?
For lack of a better term, yeah. I mean, there were quite a number of precipitating factors, but by and large, that was one of the cornerstones of it.
I'd suggest, Scott, you read a good history of the French Revolution. King Louis the 16th loaned us, so that we could have our revolution, so much money that he essentially bankrupted his own treasury, throwing the nation into a horrific depression that was so bad that there were bread riots
and extravagant spending by the monarchy and so forth.
Well,
yeah,
no, the extravagant spending of the monarchy was supporting a war in a foreign land. It was supporting democracy here in the United States. And
I don't know who answers that question. I don't know how that question could ever possibly or even responsibly be answered in the present tense. People would say, how many people should die to get rid of Adolf Hitler and Tojo?
But we're not talking about Adolf Hitler or Tojo. We're talking about
whose
biggest conquest was to attack another kingdom. Kuwait wasn't even a democratic republic. It still isn't, for that matter. I mean, his biggest contact,
what are you driving at here, Tom?
Well, I don't get it here, Scott, how you can try and compare Saddam Hussein. I know the cons love to do this, compare Saddam Hussein is just like Hitler. Come on.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is the premise of your question. Supposing someone had stood up in the United States Senate on January 1st, 1942, and said, how many American sons and fathers are we going to allow to die to take Adolf Hitler and Tojo out of power? What sort of response could someone have given at that time?
Actually, I would really recommend...
Would it have been a valid question?
It was a very valid question, Scott, and I really recommend it. Are you familiar with Rex Stout, the guy who wrote the Nero Wolfe novels?
No, I haven't read that.
Okay, he's one of the most widely read authors in the world. Is the Nero Wolfe novel. He died about, 12, 15 years ago, but he published 78, as I recall, Nero Wolfe novels, and they're translated into over 100 languages and over 200 million copies. And yeah, he did really well. And during World War II, he stopped writing for 2 years and ran the U.S. propaganda machine against Hitler. And was very active, and he wrote a book called, which is rather hard to find now, but you can find it. It's called The Illustrious Dunderheads, and all it is a compilation of speeches on the floor of the House and the Senate against U.S. involvement in World War II, and virtually all of them are Republicans, and basically the argument was made then about World War II, and this was from the 30s, from the mid 30s, right up until basically the day of Pearl Harbor. And some even after Pearl Harbor. Basically, the argument was made that either the answer to this question is very simple. How many Americans should die to fill in the blank, right? To stop Hitler, to stop Saddam, whatever. The answer
right,
is
so
either
what would the answer,
the answer,
numerical response be?
Right, exactly. There are two. There are two possible answers. Either zero or as many as it takes. And
that's
a country
not
has
an
to
unreasonable conclusion.
And a country has to decide one or the other. We have to say, okay, we are willing to have as many of our young men and women die as it takes to make this happen, or it ain't worth it at all, and it should be zero. And ultimately, I think that's the argument. And what I don't get is why there are so many conservatives who are saying people who call themselves conservatives. Actually, I think the true conservatives, like Pat Buchanan, are rightly calling this thing out and saying, you know, this war never should have happened. This is criminal what's going on here. And, you know, this whole doctrine of preemptive warfare is not only harming our reputation around the world, but we are creating more terrorists than we're stopping. You know, you quote in your piece the leaders of the Middle Eastern countries, and I didn't mark it. I'd have to find it. But anyhow, I
you didn't quote Mubarak. You know, Mubarak, the leader of Egypt, had said, if you invade Iraq, you're going to create 100 bin Ladens. We're doing it, aren't we?
Well, the piece that I wrote wasn't about Hosni Mubarak. It was about the historic political significance of democratic elections in Iraq.
Yeah, and I have to say.
And so I don't know.
You know,
I'm sorry I didn't write it to your satisfaction, Tom. I was trying to look at the historic impact of these elections and place them in the context of that nation, which has never known anything even remotely resembling like the event that's going to happen on January 30th when Iraqis go to the polls.
Well, time will tell, and let us both hope. I think this is something that you and I as Americans absolutely both agree on, that we hope that the very best outcome happens in Iraq, that democracy can actually come to that country, whatever form it takes, that peace will come, that it will infect the Middle East. It would be a wonderful thing if the neoconservative vision is actually comes true, even though I was one of those people who in the early days said this is nuts, and I continue to this day, say this is nuts, because it looks to me like we're going in the exact opposite direction. We're radicalizing the Middle East. We're militarizing the Middle East. We are destabilizing the Middle East. And I'm just not of the opinion that you can bring democracy to people at the barrel of a gun. It just, you know, historically, by and large, it doesn't work. People have to rise up and say they want their own democracy. In fact, the country in the Middle East that has the most active and aggressive pro-democracy movement, as I'm sure you know, is Iran. And, you know, they've almost taken over that country a couple of times. And then we start waving around going, Iran, axis of evil. And all of a sudden, it was a huge setback for the democracy movement in Iran when Bush said that. Are you still with me, Scott?
Yes, I'm still okay. Here. I'm trying to figure out what this has to do.
I'm
trying to get my arms around it, Tom.
All right. My point is
I'm just
that
trying to get my arms around.
Okay,
it.
Here's my point, Scott. As Americans, I think that we all want there to be a good outcome of this thing, and I don't get it why conservatives, Republicans, the folks on your side, are continuing to defend the original decision to go in there.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned that you thought that the war in Iraq was a bad idea, and you think it's a bad idea to this day.
Yeah.
And
in fact, I think we've become more of a problem than a solution as of this moment.
Well, I don't know way of background. I remember very distinctly when there was the run-up to the war in Iraq back in late 2002 and early 2003, and I was horrified at the prospect of going to war in Iraq. I didn't agree with it. I didn't think that it was a good idea. I thought it was a poorly timed idea, and I didn't like the way some of the logistics were panning out at the moment. Then I went to Iraq.
Then why?
I talked with hundreds of Iraqis, and began to put it into greater context, in the context of the merchants, in the context of the farmers, in the context of the businessmen and women who were trying to to make their way both in Iraq and across the Arab world. And I came back from Iraq thinking not only was it the correct thing to do, but maybe it was something we should have thought about earlier.
Yeah.
And so there again lies the value of experiencing and witnessing something firsthand, and how sometimes it makes a difference and sometimes it doesn't. In my particular case, it did.
So you're saying that we're speaking, by the way, to Scott Hoganson, who is the executive editor of CNSNews.com. How many days did you spend in Iraq, Scott?
I was there for about a month.
No, aside from the time you were in Kuwait, how many days were you actually in Iraq?
About seven. I went back and forth between Kuwait and Iraq.
Okay, so you're saying that during your 7 days in Iraq, you saw enough of the countryside, and you talked to enough of the people that you became 1,000 American soldiers. It was worth over $200 billion, going on $300 billion of our treasure. It was worth the limbs and the eyes and the ears of over 10,000 of our soldiers. It was worth the death of somewhere between 30 and 100,000 Iraqi civilians for us to overthrow Saddam Hussein.
Between talking with the people who live and work in Iraq, and other Arabs who have a tendency to congregate in Kuwait because it's got a very open immigration policy. As a matter of fact, there are more non-Kuwaitis living in Kuwait than there are Kuwaitis. It's sort of a magnet, if you will, for Arabs from across the world. And I was unable to find anyone in hundreds of interviews who thought that keeping Saddam Hussein in power was good for either Iraq or the Middle East or for their religion.
I'm not surprised.
Quite an eye-opening experience.
I'm not surprised, Scott, but is it worth it to us? Is the, you know, we're the ones over there now, not the... Scott, stick around. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. We've got to wrap this thing up here. Scott Hoganson, he's with CNSNews.com, the executive editor. Thanks, Scott, for being with us.
You bet.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop.
Getting on the bed.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what plug. The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's
law and profits without honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, the Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartmann.
And dump the reds in a pile, boy. Dump the reds in a pile. You'd better wipe off that smile, boy. Better wipe off that smile.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's the True People's Radio. And time for a true report from Washington, D.C., the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria Jones with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey.
What's today, any word on these 31 Marines who died in this helicopter transport, whether it was shot down or whether it was an accident, anything on that?
We don't seem to know anymore. President Bush was asked about this in the 45-minute press conference that he gave earlier this morning, and he said at that time that they were trying to find out what it was that brought the plane down, the helicopter down, but we still don't know any more than that. But certainly the biggest loss of life so far.
Yeah, yeah.
I gather that these particular planes, helicopters, keep calling them planes, tend to be quite old, but I don't know whether that had any bearing on any of this at all.
Yeah,
but
it's really sad. Yeah, and we are stressing the technology really hard. I mean, that's a very harsh environment, the sandstorms and windstorms, and And it's a tough, tough place. And you know, the oil gives out, the bearings give out. There's been a lot of warnings about how long our kind of physical stuff can withstand, not to mention the soldiers themselves, you know, what they're putting up with. So what's up in Washington?
Well, the Senate voted on the confirmation of Condoleezza Rice, and they voted, not altogether surprisingly, to confirm her. I think there were about 13 Democratic holdouts. During the debate before the confirmation vote this morning, Senator Joe Lieberman was urging his Democratic colleagues to vote for her. He made the point that she is certainly qualified, and nobody would really argue that she's not qualified, and that he urged people to give President Bush the benefit of the doubt and to allow him to confirm the person he wanted in the job and to give Condoleezza Rice the benefit of the doubt. And that if it was a question of President Bush's policies that were bothering people, that he didn't really feel that should be the reason to vote against. However, obviously, 13 or so Democrats felt that it was enough of a reason, and they did vote against.
Well, I think there's a larger issue here. What does qualified mean? I mean, what does that word mean? If we're talking about the Secretary of State, we're talking about the face of America to the rest of the world. We're talking about the person who's going to have to negotiate with the rest of the world on all matters diplomatic. And we're talking about a person who repeatedly has lied to us and the world about an issue of war and peace, about, you know, death and life.
In my opinion, that
disqualifies her.
Well, this is where Senator Lieberman seemed to be viewing qualifications in a different way, more in a theoretical way, and perhaps, in terms of experience, just having worked in the White House and worked closely with the president.
Well, I mean, you know, Ted Bundy had certain qualifications, too. He's
a brainy guy.
He was a college graduate. I mean, does that mean that we should hire him to run the local whatever? You know, I mean, it's just,
not anytime soon, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, obviously, he's not around any longer. But the point is that I think that when you consider the quote qualifications end quote of anybody, you have to consider more than simply their resume. You have to consider their behavior and their character.
And this is what Senator Barbara Boxer reiterated today. She'd already made that point yesterday. That she feels that Condoleezza Rice has been at the very least not forthcoming. That was a phrase that she used, I think, several times today.
Yeah.
And at best, really, that Condoleezza Rice has gone further and has simply not told them the truth.
Yeah.
And that's her concern.
Okay.
She expressed it quite vocally.
Yeah. We have about 30 seconds left, Victoria. The Gonzalez, is the vote on Gonzalez tomorrow?
Yes, I believe it is.
What's your sense of which way the wind's going to blow on that thing?
He'll be confirmed.
No,
there'll be some holdouts. Even some of the ones who in committee were being quite friendly towards him have subsequently said he has not answered the questions they asked him to in writing, and they're voting against.
So it might be even more than 13, do you think?
I think it'll be more than 13 for him, yes.
That's interesting. Do you think that there's going to be any Republicans breaking ranks?
You know, I don't know.
Is this story about him helping George cover up his drunk driving arrest hurting him any, do you think?
I don't think that is so much as the torture memos.
Yeah, the torture memos are the big
one. Yeah.
Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria, for the report
Thank
today
you
from
very
Washington, D.C. Great to hear from you. Have a good afternoon now. It's 27 minutes, 20. No, it's not. It's 29 minutes after the hour on the place where smart people get their news.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The first wave of layoffs at Lockheed Martin went out this month. 220 employees received notification, and nearly 1,000 additional workers will be laid off by the end of the year. Lockheed Martin will no longer be developing F-16 fighter jets, so less employees are needed. In addition, the Pentagon is considering cuts to the Raptor fighter jet program. If that cut is made, it could result in thousands more jobs being lost.
Tax incremental finance districts created nationwide were supposed to kickstart local economies hit by blight by offering tax savings to companies in order to create jobs. But Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First in Washington, D.C. is publishing a book called The Great American Jobs Scam that asserts these TIF districts have been perverted into dumb corporate giveaways that don't create the jobs that were promised.
Well, I'm talking about a system that allows companies to exact huge tax breaks and other kinds of subsidies by talking about creating good jobs, but then a system that allows companies to fail to deliver on the jobs, even though they get the big tax breaks and subsidies.
LeRoy says because TIF requirements have become too relaxed in their definition of blight, they've become a giant ripoff of both taxpayers and workers.
It hurts everybody in the long run because not only are we wasting money, giving money to companies to do things they wanted to do anyway, but we're also spending money in very inefficient, ineffective ways when we need it to be doing other things.
Missouri, LeRoy says, is an especially egregious example of TIFs gone awry. A Republican county executive in Missouri filed a case currently before the state Supreme Court challenging the loose definition of blight after hundreds of acres of cornfields were deemed blighted.
A judge in Wisconsin ruled that prison inmates are not entitled to minimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The suit was filed on behalf of inmates at the Whiteville Correctional Facility in Tennessee. Wisconsin has a contract to send prisoners to that facility. The cafeteria at Whiteville is managed by a private corporation, and lawyers for the inmates argued that because they were being managed by a private company, they should be paid minimum wage. Judge Ken Posner argued that because inmates are not employees of a prison, they are not protected. Posner wrote that people are not imprisoned for the purpose of earning a living. The prison puts them to work to offset prison costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to Gallup, 17% of U.S. workers are actively disengaged, costing U.S. businesses $300 billion a year. Actively disengaged means unhappy workers actively undermining their companies. Another 54% of workers are not engaged. Engaged, according to Gallup, not putting any real passion into their work. Only 29% of workers, according to Gallup, are truly engaged in their work. But don't blame workers. Gallup finds the cause of this disengagement is lousy managers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Dianne Feinstein, who gave these glowing, marvelous, let me introduce my friend Condi Rice to you, United States Senate. Endorsement of Rice. It's a rather strange reality. Her husband runs a company, URS Corporation. He owns 24% of the stock in it. This is a company that brought in more than $2.4 billion in revenue 2 years ago. And he's on the board of directors. And they recently acquired a company called EG&G from the Carlyle Group. So Pappy Bush decided to sell him something here. It's apparently EG&G. And that started getting them active in defense contracting. And here this report from the San Francisco News, sfgate.com. URS Corp, a San Francisco planning engineering firm partially owned by California Senator Dianne Feinstein's husband, landed an Army contract Monday worth up to $600 million. It's the latest in a string of plum defense jobs snared by URS. In February, the firm won an Army engineering and logistics contract that could bring in $3.1 billion during the next 8 years. Richard Bloom, Feinstein's husband, serves on the company's board of directors and controls about 24% of the firm's stock. I mean, the Ford family only controls, I think, about 6% of Ford's stock. That's substantial. You own 24% of a multi-billion dollar company. That's substantial. I somehow suspect you will not hear conservatives criticizing the good senator for her behavior. You heard it here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Orlando, Florida on the line. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Tom, I just want to, before I talk about the Iraq War, make a quick comment about yesterday's guest who was on from
NoDeathTax.org.
Yeah.
It was funny, although he said that no matter how they polled the wards and how they worded it, that he still calls his website No Death Tax, and every time he referred to it as a death tax.
Yeah, they did some very, very good, in fact, actually it was Frank Luntz, I believe, who claims credit for that. There was an article, I think it was in the Washington Post, this was maybe 6 months, a year ago, one of these Sunday magazine, you know, feature pieces on Frank Luntz, and talked about how he had done the polling on this thing and went to these people and said, you know, no matter how we look at it, when you call it the inheritance tax or you call it the estate tax, that the majority of Americans are in favor of it being there. But when you call it a death tax, suddenly the support drops down into the 20% range, the high 20s, as I recall. And so there it is. Yeah. Good point.
As far as this Iraq war is concerned, you know, I really get kind of irritated when we talk about loss of life. A lot of times, just in heavy loss of U.S. Personnel.
Yeah.
The biggest day was probably shock and awe with the loss of life. But beyond that, the cost of war financially is a luxury that we can't afford right now. I mean, you know, what we could have done with the money back home as far as schools, education, healthcare, housing. We're cutting college funds right now, and
or we could
be able to have money for destruction, but we can't find money for construction.
Yeah, or we could have simply taken some of that money and paid down the national debt. We're paying $160 billion in interest this year on the debt that Reagan ran up in the 1980s, so that he could make it look like, you know, good times were here again in '84 when he ran for re-election.
And the things that you can't put a price tag on, like when these troops come back home, they're definitely going to have mental problems. It's going to go throughout the web of society.
Oh yeah.
There's going the 200 years that it took this nation to build up some respectability throughout the world has pretty much gone down the drain, and so is all our trust throughout the world. That's something you can't put a price tag on.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well said, Mike. Thanks for the call. I
have
appreciate
a good day.
Yeah, you too. Good to hear from you. It's this Muhammad Khalif Al Jamali, a judge in West Baghdad's major crime court. Says he regularly sees suspects hauled before his bench who have clearly been badly beaten. This from the Financial Times of London, the conservative, the Wall Street Journal, as it were, of the UK. Very conservative publication. Sometimes they cannot even stand up, says the judge. I often order them to be sent to the hospital to treat their broken bones. However, he says, the suspects will not admit to having been tortured for fear that the police will take them back to the cells and do even worse. Financial Times goes on, the Iraqi police's use of torture against criminal and insurgent suspects is an open secret in Baghdad's criminal justice system. They talk about how Human Rights Watch just accused Iraqi security forces of committing systematic torture against detainees. Police and others involved in the system, reports the Financial Times, think that torture is justified. We have brought back what we said we overthrew. Now, it's interesting. There's the little piece from today's paper talking also about how the United States government had proposed to go into Afghanistan and spray the poppies with defoliant, because we're getting all kinds of flack from the European countries. The European Union countries, they're having right now an epidemic, an absolute epidemic of heroin addiction. It is reaching our shores as well. Heroin addiction in the United States has reached levels not seen since I'm not even sure we saw them in the 60s, but that was the last time that there was a spike in heroin use. And here it is again. And it's really hitting Europe hard, because it is so cheap now. Heroin is so cheap. It is becoming it's becoming a recreational drug. And it's, of course, nothing to mess around with. Heroin is almost as addictive as nicotine. Far more addictive than alcohol, and very destructive drug. No, I'm not being facetious. Nicotine is actually several times more addictive than heroin. And that's another issue, I mean, that we can talk about. But the point is that heroin is a terrible, destructive drug. And its use is spreading around the world because the last 2 years in a row, ever since we liberated Afghanistan from the Taliban, The opium poppy crop has been bigger than it has ever been in history. You'll recall George Bush had given, he was criticized for this, widely criticized, had given the Taliban, it was either $37 or $47 million back in 2000, it was late 2001, as I recall, mid-2001, in order to eradicate their poppy crop. And they took the money and they gave it to the opium growers, to the warlords out in the hinterlands, and said, here's some money, you know, wipe out the crops. And they wiped out the crops. Then the heroin supply in the world went down, the price went up. And then we liberated them. And then they had elections. And everybody was amazed. I mean, it was interesting, the reporting on this story in the United States. Reporting on the story in the United States was, isn't it incredible all these millions of people, some 10 million people in Iraq, in Afghanistan, going to the polls and voting? What I thought was really interesting was it was largely in the foreign press that it was reported that the warlords who control the vast majority of the country were either intimidating, threatening, or paying people to go to the polls and vote the right way, vote in a way that would help them out. And so now you've got a situation where Karzai, the former Unocal oil company executive that we put into place in Afghanistan, doesn't even control the entire city of Kabul. The vast majority of the country is outside his reach. It's run by these narco traffickers, these tribal warlords who make their money growing opium. And the United States had proposed as a result, in no small part of enormous pressure from European countries, had proposed to go in and spray defoliant, an Agent Orange type stuff, on the poppy crops and knock them out. And Hamid Karzai just said, no, you can't do that. So we've decided not to do that. So we have a narco state, apparently the world's most virulent narco state, now in Afghanistan. And outside of parts of Kabul, the women are back in their burqas. And men who drink alcohol are beaten, and people who don't pray right, I mean, they're back. The Taliban has taken control of good chunks of eastern Afghanistan. And now in Iraq, we are creating what we overthrew. I mean, we had helped Saddam get into power. We supported him in power. We supported him in the war against Iran. We say, you know, the enemy of our enemy is our friend. Don Rumsfeld went over there, shook his hand famously on TV, sold him weapons of mass destruction at the time that he was reportedly gassing the Kurds. Oh, that was no problem at that time. And now, we find out that Alawi, our latest handpicked president for life, maybe, of Iraq. Just wait. Alawi is a Shia. He's a Shiite. He's a member of the Shia majority. So I think the odds are fairly high we're going to see Alawi elected in the elections that are coming up. And now, this story that was an obscure story in the Australian newspapers, the Sydney Morning Herald, back when it first broke, you know, six months ago, that Alawi had, in his first weeks as prime minister, had visited a police station, and they had seven guys that they had arrested as being insurgents. And he said, well, bring them out here, and they lined them up against the wall. They were all blindfolded. And he asked one of the officers for his gun, his pistol. And he took this pistol and he shot these guys in the head, all seven of them. Six of them died. And it was widely covered in Australia and in Europe. It was broken by the largest newspaper in Australia, the story. Their reporter was there. Didn't see the killing happen, but interviewed many of the people involved. And said that there was an American correspondent there as well, or another reporter. Well, now we know who the other reporter was, John Lee Anderson, with the New Yorker magazine. And he corroborates it. According to the witnesses, Alawi personally shot seven handcuffed and blindfolded prisoners who'd been lined up against a wall in a courtyard of the prison. This is, I'm not reading John Lee Anderson's words. This is just the story. Six died immediately, and their bodies were taken away by Alawi's bodyguards. One of the eyewitnesses told Magot, this was the Australian journalist, Paul Magot, an award-winning foreign correspondent, quote, Alawi wanted to send a message to his policemen and soldiers not to be scared if they killed anyone, end quote. The three of the men who were murdered are named Ahmed Abdullah Amer Lufti Mohammed Amel Kutasi, and Walid Mehdi Ahmed Al-Samari. So we have some names. You know, an investigative reporter could do something with this. You got the actual names of the people. You've got two different reporters who are reporting it. And the U.S. State Department, Richard Boucher, was asked about this. And he did not deny it. Instead, he said that we do not, quote, have any information that would indicate these reports are true. Now, a good follow-up question would have been, are you looking for any information? To the best of my knowledge, the answer is no. See, in Iraq now, increasingly, they refer to Alawi as Saddam without the mustache. I'm assuming you know that he used to work for the Mukhabarat, the secret police of Saddam Hussein. Up until 1975, he was an informer and, some say, an assassin for the Mukhabarat. As Alawi's cousin said, quote, he understands the Mukhabarat culture of intimidation. After he had a falling out with the Baathists in 1975, he went to work for the CIA. So are we simply trading one dictator for another? Time will tell. I sincerely hope not. And I have this feeling that history is repeating itself. And in a way, in a way that raises the question, you know, can we afford this? Patrick Buchanan was mentioned in the last hour. And this is interesting. Pat Buchanan wrote a piece for WorldNet Daily. Well, Creator Syndicate syndicated it. WorldNet Daily reprinted it. I'm sure it was in other places as well. He says, the backslapping of Republicans notwithstanding, we do not have a true or tough conservative in the Oval Office. There is no conservative party in Washington, and we shall pay an historic price for it. Or he says, a historic price for it. American English. He says, from every standpoint, America is a nation overextended, living beyond its means, mortgaging its future for the present. And this is spot on. What can you say? It's Pat Buchanan, of all people. This is the point. This is larger than liberal conservative. This is larger than Republican Democrat. What we have here is a radical regime, the Bush regime, out of control. The neocons, the Wolfowitz and these guys, and Feith and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Jeb Bush, who signed back in 1998 this letter to Bill Clinton from the Project for New American Century, demanding that he go in and overthrow Saddam Hussein now, that being in 98, had this vision. This vision. I don't think they were eating mushrooms. They had this vision that if we simply took control of Iraq, that all the rest of the Middle East would suddenly say, oh, gee, that's wonderful. Let's be democratic. And they're acting it out, and it's not working out the way they thought. And in the process, we're ending up bankrupt. It's a tragedy. It's a tragic day for America. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Some plants that desperately need to save water are quite generous in giving it away. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cactus that live in the desert need to conserve all their resources to survive. So scientists became curious when they saw a barrel cactus that seemed to be giving water away to the ants that were crawling all over it. The water is nectar that's rich with sugar. Joshua Ness says the sugar gets the ants jacked up on carbohydrates, and that makes them hungry for meat. Ness is an ecologist at the University of Arizona in Tucson. He says the ants satisfy their craving for meat by eating other insects on the cactus, insects that would otherwise chew up the cactus itself.
If you give them sugar, it eventually sort of requires that they go out and forage for meat, just like if we were to eat cake all day, eventually we'd want something a little more substantial. So indirectly what we see then is that the more sugar these ants eat, the more aggressive they become, the more carnivorous or meat hungry. And what we find is that the most effective ant bodyguards are the ones that are the most meat hungry. So if we compare those different species in terms of their abilities to attack caterpillars or their willingness to do so, what we find is that the really sugar hungry species don't do a particularly good job, but the meat hungry species do.
Ants need to eat different types of food to maintain a proper balance of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. The nectar from the cactus gives them a lot of carbohydrates that might be pushing this ratio out of line and prompting them to eat more meat to bring it back into balance. Ness and a team of researchers studied 4 species of ants in a cactus that's common in the Sonoran Desert. Ness says their findings are particularly interesting because they show how the ants provide an important service to the plant as long as they get their reward. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
People try to put us to death. Talking about
we get around.
And welcome back. The scandalous spreading of government-paid propagandists. Now, from Armstrong Williams to nationally syndicated columnist Maggie Gallagher, she apparently was took $21,500 from the Department of Health and Human Services to promote George W. Bush's encouraging marriage as a way of strengthening families promotion or proposal or whatever program. She also received an additional $20,000 from the Bush administration in 2002 and 2003 for writing a report called Can Government Strengthen Marriage? This has been going on for years. Bush administration has been paying off journalists. And then we got Brian Williams, the guy who replaced Tom Brokaw. He's saying, and I quote, it's my duty to listen to Rush Limbaugh. He is saying that it's his duty to listen to Rush Limbaugh. And he says, and I quote, I do listen to Rush. I listen to it from a radio in my office, or depending on my day, if it's in the car, I'll listen to Rush. And he will tell you I've been listening for years. I think it's my duty to listen to Rush. He says, for 3 hours a day, you can listen and hear the like-minded calling in from across the country. This is now the anchor of NBC Nightly News, the guy who replaced Tom Brokaw. I'm sorry. I'm on the edge of losing it. Ed in California, help me out here, Ed. How you doing?
Oh, losing it. Oh, man, you're once again, you're just so far to the left.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. It's,
I mean,
just,
let's face it. I got a question about, you know, the $50 million for Bin Laden.
Yeah.
You know, I think we found him in the public schools.
How so?
So if we just give the $50 million, obviously the family isn't going to turn him back in for $50 million. They own half the world.
Yeah, well, the Bin Laden family isn't going to turn
him in. Bin Laden family isn't going to turn him in.
They own half the Bush family. You know, that's the single largest patron of the Bush family. I'm talking about Pappy
Absolutely.
And Junior. The single largest patron of the Bush family is the Bin Laden family. The Bin Laden family and others in Saudi Arabia have transferred over $1 billion over the last 40 years to the Bush family and allied and associated interests.
So you know why it won't work? Is could you imagine the Bush family turning in one of their uncles or cousins for $50 million?
Yeah.
They spend more than that on lunch.
Yeah.
What we got to offer them is 70 brides and 70 virgins.
Well,
and that'll turn them in.
He may already have that. I mean, who knows?
Give him another 70.
There you
They're
go.
Free.
There you go. Yeah. It's.
Have
it's,
a good time at the dentist.
Thanks a lot, Ed. I appreciate it. Yeah, if that's possible. I actually have a fairly decent dentist. So, Rama Schneider is coming up next. Thanks for being with me these 2 hours. We'll see you again tomorrow. I'm Tom Hartman here with you, telling the truths that the multinational corporations, the neocons, the Bush administration would rather you didn't know. And, no, they haven't offered to grease my palms with cash, I'll tell you that. We'll see you later.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The first wave of layoffs at Lockheed Martin went out this month. 220 employees received notification and nearly 1,000 additional workers will be laid off by the end of the year. Lockheed Martin will no longer be developing F-16 fighter jets, so less employees are needed. In addition, the Pentagon is considering cuts to the Raptor fighter jet program. If that cut is made, it could result in thousands more jobs being lost.
Tax incremental finance districts created nationwide were supposed to kickstart local economies hit by blight by offering tax savings to companies in order to create jobs. But Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First in Washington, D.C. is publishing a book called The Great American Jobs Scam that asserts these TIF districts have been perverted into dumb corporate giveaways that don't create the jobs that were promised.
Well, I'm talking about a system that allows companies to exact huge tax breaks and other kinds of subsidies by talking about creating good jobs, but then a system that allows companies to fail to deliver on the jobs, even though they get the big tax breaks and subsidies.
LeRoy says because TIF requirements have become too relaxed in their definition of blight, they've become a giant ripoff of both taxpayers and workers.
It hurts everybody in the long run because not only are we wasting money, giving money to companies to do things they wanted to do anyway, but we're also spending money in very inefficient, ineffective ways when we need it to be doing other things.
Missouri, LeRoy says, is an especially egregious example of TIFs gone awry. A Republican county executive in Missouri filed a case currently before the state Supreme Court challenging the loose definition of blight after hundreds of acres of cornfields were deemed blighted.
A judge in Wisconsin ruled that prison inmates are not entitled to minimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The suit was filed on behalf of inmates at the Whiteville Correctional Facility in Tennessee. Wisconsin has a contract to send prisoners to that facility. The cafeteria at Whiteville is managed by a private corporation, and lawyers for the inmates argued that because they were being managed by a private company, they should be paid minimum wage. Judge Ken Posner argued that because inmates are not employees of a prison, they are not protected. Posner wrote that people are not imprisoned for the purpose of earning a living. The prison puts them to work to offset prison costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to Gallup, 17% of U.S. workers are actively disengaged, costing U.S. businesses $300 billion a year. Actively disengaged means unhappy workers actively undermining their companies. Another 54% of workers are not engaged, according to Gallup, not putting any real passion into their work. Only 29% of workers, according to Gallup, are truly engaged in their work. But don't blame workers. Gallup finds the cause of this disengagement is lousy managers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Time to take another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. Today's feature, blue jeans. Even the rich like to dress down every now and then, and slipping into a comfy pair of jeans is perfect for puttering around the mansion or driving your Hummer out to pick up some truffles at the gourmet market. But alas, you're rich, and your social class requires that you meet certain standards of attire, so you can't just throw on a pair of common old Levi's like I wear. Sure, you could upgrade to a pair of $150 designer jeans, but, well, they just don't have the panache that a person of your standing demands. Luckily, though, Kelvin Stewart has stepped forward with just the jeans for you. The New York-based fashion designer has introduced an exclusive line that he calls APO Jeans. Each pair is made to order, matching a customer's specific measurements, waist, rump, thighs, ankles, and so forth. But that's just the start. APOs are made from a special denim costing $40 a yard, some 20 times the cost of the denim worn by us commoners. Still, denim is denim. What really sets your jeans apart is that Stewart will fully customize them for you, embellishing them with rivets and buttons made of gold, platinum, or other precious metals. We wanted to be the Mercedes-Benz of the denim industry, says Stewart. And so he is, complete with a price tag that starts at $1,000 a pair. To really strut your stuff, however, you might want to pay more than $4,000 a pair and get the ones that have a dozen sparkling diamonds embedded in the front button.
You'll also be reassured to know that, in case anyone questions whether your genes are truly special, Stewart provides a certificate of authenticity, an appraisal, and a born-on date for each pair of APOs. This is Jim Hightower saying, I wonder, can you just toss these things in the washer-dryer? Or do you have to take them to a Mercedes dealer for detailing?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider filling in for this hour, the third and last hour of today's exciting show of good progressive and liberal discussion, exposure of lies, and just generally being downright good people all across the board. You want to join in on the conversation? 1-866-889-8894. You know, get your grubby old fingers over to the phone. That's what you're going to have to pound out on the little keyboard. Let's get right down to business here. Representative Lynn Woolsey, she's a Democrat from California, plans to introduce a congressional resolution today, I guess, in the U.S. House of Representatives, calling on President Bush to begin the immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. Representative Woolsey, who is in her seventh term in the House of Representatives, told the Institute for Public Accuracy, quote, removing some 130,000 soldiers from Iraq immediately is not logistically feasible, but we must take the first steps. We should not abandon Iraq. There is still a critical role for the United States in providing the development aid that can help create a civil society, support education, and rebuild Iraq's economic infrastructure. But the military option is clearly not working. Ms. Woolsey goes on to say it is truly time to support the troops by bringing them home as soon as realistically possible. And to help us explore the meaning of that proposal from Representative Woolsey and maybe get into some other issues involving Iraq is Mike Gravel. He's used to be a senator from Alaska some 24 years ago. He's currently chairman of the Democracy Foundation. And on that note, I want to welcome Mr. Gravel. I want to welcome you, sir, to the Tom Hartman radio show.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Well, it's great for you to take some time out of your life to help us, because, you know, oftentimes we
well,
sit...
Well, this is an important subject, and what Representative Woolsey is doing is very, very laudable and should be encouraged.
Right, absolutely. So before we get to that, and I do want to get to that very quickly here, but real quick, the Democracy Foundation, sir, if you want to tell us about that real fast. And
what that is that's a nonprofit organization that is trying to bring about direct democracy in the United States.
Right.
And the only way that will happen is, of course, if the people do it. The government's not going to empower the people at their expense.
So you mean as opposed to how we do it now, where we elect the senators and the representatives down to D.C., and then they make the laws, that replacing that with a direct democracy, or am I missing on that?
No, it's not replacing that. It's adding to it. But you put your finger on it. The key, the central power of government is lawmaking. And so what we have to do is to have people become lawmakers, and that way they can have a say in the policies that they're governed by.
Wow, that's a fascinating subject unto itself. I mean, that's one that could be spent all day on. And hopefully someday we'll get a chance to come back to that, and maybe we'll even get to come back to it today. I guess let's head back to Representative Lynn Woolsey's congressional resolution for the House of Representatives. What do you know about that? What is she actually proposing?
Well, other than that she's initiating it, and I think this is to her credit. Realistically, I know she knows and others know that this isn't going to pass because they're in the minority. But what's important is to go ahead and initiate the dialogue, and that is to get people to start talking about getting out of Iraq. We'll never get out of Iraq unless we start making the discussion and the debate about it.
Yeah, it seems like everybody's saying, oh, we got to stay there as long as it takes, as long as it takes. But there's never been any definition of what as long as it takes means. And that's what she's trying to get at then?
I presume partially, but this whole rhetoric of we got to stay there as long as it takes, stop and think, we made a mistake in going in there.
Right.
And to maintain our position there is to just continue to strengthen the results of that mistake.
Right. Let me ask you then, sir. We're talking to Mike Gravel. He's chairman of the Democracy Foundation. By the way, do you have a website for the Democracy Foundation?
Yes, we do. And thank you for asking. It's www.n as in Nancy, I as an initiative, the number 4, D as in democracy.us,
right,
which stands for the National Initiative for Democracy.
Oh.
NI4D.us.
Okay, great. All right. And you were also once upon a time senator from Alaska. That was a quarter of a century ago. Boy, that must seem.
Oh, yeah, a long time ago.
The way you say that, yeah, it's time does fly. What options, Mr. Gravel, do you offer as far as what we can do other than keep our troops there for the next, I don't know, 5, 10, 20, 100 years, trying to establish some form of democracy that we're going to find acceptable enough to get out of Iraq? What's our options?
Well, the option, there are no options. I think the only option is to get out.
Right.
As soon as we get out of the way, then the people of Iraq can begin to deal with setting up a structure of government that they feel compatible with their culture. And for us to sit there and think we're going to impose democracy or bring democracy, have seminars and so forth, it's going to happen when people are dying in the streets, is well nigh ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, the only answer is to just get out. And then the problem will begin. You can begin to solve the problem. See, what's happened by our staying there, we act as a magnet to all of the malcontents and al-Qaedas of the world to come to one locale and to go ahead and bleed us to death, which is what they're doing.
Yeah.
And have been doing. And so the only way to stanch bleeding is to turn around and say, well, we're getting out, and it's not a question of cutting and running. It's the question we never should have got in.
Yeah.
Now, when they talk about democracy, stop and think of what happened. We just had free elections in the Palestinian Authority where the Palestinians have elected a new head of state.
Yeah, Mahmoud Abbas.
Do you hear about the Bush administration spending any amount of money to go ahead and shore up that democracy that's there, that exists?
No, quite the opposite.
And, other than the lip service that we're paying to the leadership of Israel.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I see, is we keep supplying money to the Israelis, who seem to have it in their interest to make sure the Palestinians don't develop a viable alternative to the current situation, which seems to work to the Israeli government's benefit. But that's another story, too.
But the main story is that the only way you're going to get out of Iraq is to begin a dialogue, a national debate on the subject of withdrawal. And that's what Lynn Woolsey is doing by introducing this legislation today.
Right. Here's something, and I've been trying to think about this one the last couple of days because it troubles me. Iraq is now the new training and recruiting grounds for anti-American, anti-Western terrorists. And it was not that way, no matter what anybody wants to think. I'm not saying making any nice statements about Hussein here, but it was not that way prior to our invasion of Iraq. But now it is, and that's a reality, whether we like it or not, and whoever we blame or not doesn't matter. It's a reality we have to deal with. If we just pull out of there right now, do we run the risk of, I don't know, a repeat of what happened in Afghanistan when we helped Al-Qaeda chase out the Soviets, and then, you know, we pulled out of there, and then we got attacked from people who were based out of Afghanistan. Do we run that risk?
The parallel is not it's not the same parallel. First off, the Soviet Union was trying to support a secular government in Afghanistan.
Right.
We supported the Mujahideen, who were the religious fanatics,
right,
and armed them. And it was more done to try to give a black eye to the Soviet Union as part of the Cold War.
Yep.
And it's not a question of our pulling out. We were never present there. What we did is we had operatives, and we supplied them with the necessary weapons, the Stingers.
Yep.
And so we didn't pull out. And after the Soviet Union left, you developed this theocratic state, which was as oppressive as one could be. And so that's the legacy we initially gave to the people of Afghanistan was the Taliban.
So how would that differ from than what we're looking at in Iraq today, Mr. Gravel?
Now, a departure in Iraq today could be tied with two things. One, we need to train a police force and need to equip it properly.
Right.
The training they have right now is very inadequate, and they're very poorly equipped. You know, they run around in pickup trucks.
Right.
As compared to the safety vehicles we have, the best place to train probably is to take them out of Iraq and into Europe and train them there and then send them back rather than try and set up a training within Iraq itself.
Well, now,
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, didn't they try to do that a little? I'm thinking Romania or Ukraine or Poland or somewhere. The country slips my mind. Didn't they try to take several thousand out and do some training in Europe? And there was a reason why.
They may have. I think it's an idea that's been around. And I'm just suggesting that that is the most viable way to try and bring about the necessary trained forces to maintain stability.
Okay. So you're not like advocating, okay, hey, tomorrow everybody hop on.
Well, nobody's advocating that.
I'm trying to dredge up the picture of when we did the final withdrawal from Vietnam from the embassy in Saigon. Those infamous pictures of people climbing up to the very top of the embassy to get into a helicopter to get flown offshore. That's not what we're discussing here.
Well, what you're discussing, though, is a situation where a lot of Iraqis have collaborated with us, and clearly we leave the scene. Those people are going to be at risk,
right,
of being retaliated against by other forces. But we have a government now. They're going to have an election. It's going to be a bizarre election at best. And on the strength of that election, we ought to say, okay, we are withdrawing. Within 6 months, we're all going to be out of there. And we hope that the UN and other interested parties will help fill the void. And they will, because the oil that comes out of Iraq basically supplies Europe. And so you'll see them step up to the plate once everybody knows that what's going to be happening is going to be done by the Iraqis and not by the American occupation forces.
Okay, we're talking to Mike Gravel, chairman of the Democracy Foundation. Mr. Gravel, can I get you to hang on through this commercial break? I'd like to ask you some questions about the Senate and some of the hearings that have been going on.
That'd be
great. Thank you very much. All right, Rahm Schneider in for Tom Hartman. You'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yowzy mama. Welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. Robert Schneider sitting in for Tom. Kind enough to join us on the phone for a little while, Mr. Mike Gravel, currently chairman of the Democracy Foundation, online at NI4D. That's the letter N-I, the number 4D.us. And he's formerly Senator Gravel from Alaska. That was some 24 years ago, though. And thank you very much once again, Mr. Gravel, for joining us. We certainly appreciate this. Did you get a chance to watch any of the hearing, any of the Senate so-called debate this morning about the Condoleezza Rice appointment?
But I just got snippets of it, and
yeah.
I think it's going to be very interesting. And here again, too, is Barbara Boxer really deserves a lot of credit for getting this dialogue going, because you remember when we had the hearings before the 9/11 committee.
Right, yes.
And of course, it was obvious and embarrassing that Condoleezza Rice had lied.
Yep, absolutely.
And did it with a straight face. And now she's appointed, promoted, and to not bring these things up, I think would be derelict in their duty. So I'm glad that they're now having a dialogue over this.
Yes, at least some of them did. This is the part that I think troubles me most on a personal level. And everybody, and including, who's that? Senator Biden from Delaware. He even got up and he said that although he felt like Rice had lied to him, which she obviously did lie. I was watching when he was questioning her from the confirmation hearings. But despite all of what she misled him about, he felt that the president has the right to have people around him who he wants. And they keep talking about this advice consent in the Constitution like it's something that the Senate automatically has to give. And when I look at the Constitution, it says that the president can appoint people like the Secretary of State with and by the advice and consent of the president. The Constitution never says anything about, gee, you know, if the president puts a name there, you've got to do this appointment. But I kept hearing this, notably mostly from Republicans, but I heard it from some Democrats, too, who voiced unease about Condoleezza Rice. In your time in the Senate, Mr. Gravel, was that your understanding of what the constitutional advice and consent meant?
Certainly not. The Senate certainly is independent to do what it wants to do.
Right.
But politicians, being what they are, they're very condescending, and so you can get a situation where you get a person in a powerful position like Condoleezza Rice, and she lies to you.
Yeah.
And you acknowledge that she lies to you, and then she's appointed to Secretary of State.
Yep.
And you go ahead and vote for her.
Right.
I think it's appalling. I certainly, if I were in the Senate today, would not vote for her confirmation and would oppose it, because the president's entitled to pick his own team, but he's not entitled to pick a team of liars who lie to the American public from the position that they hold.
I want to thank you for using the L word, by the way, because I believe that's something we shy away from too much. And it's, to me, the only way to really understand what the Bush administration has been doing lately. Things make sense if you think that they're lying to you, but they don't make sense any other way. I guess we're going to come up on another hard break, Mr. Gravel, and I really want to thank you for your time. It's been enlightening and a great conversation. And if you want to, real quick, what has the Democracy Foundation been out doing lately?
What it's trying to do is to enact legislation. When you go to the site, ni4d.us, you'll
right.
be able to register and vote for the national initiative. And when enough Americans have voted for it, it becomes the law of the land. And all Americans will become lawmakers in every government jurisdiction of the United States partnership with representative government.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Gravel.
Thank you for having me.
And you have an excellent day.
You too.
I will. Bye. Okay. That was Mike Gravel, chairman of the Democracy Foundation and an ex-senator from Alaska. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. You all will be right back.
Love guides.
My daughter has a million things going on in her daily life, from softball to band to voice lessons. My husband and I like to make sure she doesn't spend her idle time idle, because an idle mind is a playground for trouble. You see, occupying our daughter's free time and keeping her active makes us feel confident that she won't be hanging out with the wrong crowds.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The first wave of layoffs at Lockheed Martin went out this month. 220 employees received notification and nearly 1,000 additional workers will be laid off by the end of the year. Lockheed Martin will no longer be developing F-16 fighter jets, so less employees are needed. In addition, the Pentagon is considering cuts to the Raptor fighter jet program. If that cut is made, it could result in thousands more jobs being lost.
Tax incremental finance districts created nationwide were supposed to kickstart local economies hit by blight by offering tax savings to companies in order to create jobs. But Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First in Washington, D.C. is publishing a book called The Great American Jobs Scam that asserts these TIF districts have been perverted into dumb corporate giveaways that don't create the jobs that were promised.
Well, I'm talking about a system that allows companies to exact huge tax breaks and other kinds of subsidies by talking about creating good jobs, but then a system that allows companies to fail to deliver on the jobs, even though they get the big tax breaks and subsidies.
LeRoy says because TIF requirements have become too relaxed in their definition of blight, they've become a giant ripoff of both taxpayers and workers.
It hurts everybody in the long run because not only are we wasting money, giving money to companies to do things they wanted to do anyway, but we're also spending money in very inefficient, ineffective ways when we need it to be doing other things.
Missouri, LeRoy says, is an especially egregious example of TIFs gone awry. A Republican county executive in Missouri filed a case currently before the state Supreme Court challenging the loose definition of blight after hundreds of acres of cornfields were deemed blighted.
A judge in Wisconsin ruled that prison inmates are not entitled to minimum wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The suit was filed on behalf of inmates at the Whiteville Correctional Facility in Tennessee. Wisconsin has a contract to send prisoners to that facility. The cafeteria at Whiteville is managed by a private corporation, and lawyers for the inmates argued that because they were being managed by a private company, they should be paid minimum wage. Judge Ken Posner argued that because inmates are not employees of a prison, they are not protected. Posner wrote that people are not imprisoned for the purpose of earning a living. The prison puts them to work to offset prison costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to Gallup, 17% of U.S. workers are actively disengaged, costing U.S. businesses $300 billion a year. Actively disengaged means unhappy workers actively undermining their companies. Another 54% of workers are not engaged, according to Gallup, not putting any real passion into their work. Only 29% of workers, according to Gallup, are truly engaged in their work. But don't blame workers. Gallup finds the cause of this disengagement is lousy managers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yowzy, baby. All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman Radio Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for the man, the Tomster. Somebody who I literally consider a brilliant person. And I'm not sure. I've tried to figure out if I've ever applied that adjective in the literal sense to anybody in my life before. I don't think I have. I have a world of respect for Tom. You know, I don't always agree with him, and I don't always think he's right. But, however, he is a brilliant individual, and we're all very lucky to have somebody of his quality, intellect, experience, and ability to tell a story to help us figure out what goes on in this world. But anyway, enough about Tom. He's off doing other stuff. So this is our time, 1-866-889-8894, if you want to play with me on the radio here, as always welcome. Chat room. You go to TomHartman.com, follow the links, get into the chat rooms. I mean, not only some of the smartest people in the world are there in the chat room, all of the smartest people in the world are in the chat room. Period. I mean, without exception, without doubt. I mean, these people are great. I also made a promise. By the time we leave at the top of the hour, I'm going to be leaving you feeling empowered. But first, I think I'm going to piss you all off for a little bit here, because that's even more fun. You know, Just having a room full of
piss off people.
That's great, but I enjoy it. Before we do, just to carry on a little bit of what we were talking about in the first half of the hour, U.S. Representative Jan Schakowsky, she's a Democrat from Illinois, has announced today that she's going to oppose the Bush administration's impending request for an additional $80 billion to continue the war in Iraq. Congress so far has approved more than $200 billion in supplemental or additional appropriations sought by the White House for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The bulk of the funding, however, has been for the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Quote, I will not vote to throw more money after bad. At the same time that the Bush administration has spent billions of dollars in Iraq, we have seen the insurgency spread. More brave soldiers lose their lives and innocent Iraqis die in great numbers. Our military campaign has brought neither security at home nor peace in Iraq. It's time to bring our troops home, Schakowsky said. So, maybe some people, well, no, there were always some who had their voice, but maybe now what's happening is their voice is being put out to where the public can finally hear it. And you wouldn't hear it if all you had was, you know, the corporate media. Look, if all you had was the right-wing talking heads, which just absolutely pervade everywhere, anyway, they're there. And you know who they are. I know who they are. They're all over the place. And, you know, I'll tell you the truth. After the election, I was so disgusted, I just stopped listening to any of them, and I feel like a much happier person for it. Oh, yes. Show sponsors. You know, I got a fantastic wife. She is a hot-looking babe. She's smart as a whip. She loves me, and she's put up with me for a lot of years now. I think it's, 17 years or something. Now, I didn't meet her on DemocraticMatch.com, but maybe you can meet somebody like that in DemocraticMatch.com. And then after you meet your hot babe future wife on DemocraticMatch.com, go over to EcoWine.com or call 1-888-ECO-WINE, order some wine to have a little candlelight warm-up dinner with your new babe. And then when you guys are done with your nice romantic evening, you can wake up the next morning, pour a cup of coffee, sit down in front of your Mac computer that you got at smalldog.com, and catch up on the day's news. For more on Small Dog, 1-800-511-MAX. Hey! That's a good story. You know, that describes some of my evenings, except for the wine. I don't drink alcohol anymore. I'm a non-practicing drunk, and I prefer to keep it that way. I lost too much of my life. But not everybody. It's just me, okay? It's just the way I am. All right. I was going through an exercise and frustration yesterday some and today. I watched a bit of what they called debates in the Senate. And I guess it was actually a debate this morning. There was an honest exchange of differing ideas about Condoleezza Rice. Of course, Condoleezza Rice has been confirmed by the Senate. It's whatever it was to 13. I don't think there was 100 votes. I could be wrong, but there were 13 Democrats who voted against Condoleezza Rice's appointment as Secretary of State. And I was just making some notes. I didn't have time to do production work and get out sound clips or anything, because there are some really notable sound clips, some good and some absolutely awful, 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 awful. The first thing that really hit me, and this is what I asked our guest, Mr. Mike Gravel from the Democracy Foundation. It's this concept that where in the Constitution does it say the president has the right to have the cabinet that he wants? You know why? We don't have a king. Okay, well, maybe we do right now. We're not supposed to have a king. When Tom calls George III, that's supposed to be kind of a little bit of a humorous reference to the fact that for our American Revolution, we threw off King George III, and now we're stuck with our third George president. So it's George III, and we got to chuck this guy off, too. But unfortunately, at least from what I can tell, listening to these politicians down in Washington, D.C., the whole concept is we do have a king, and somehow, despite the fact it says nothing in the Constitution about it, a lot of politicians in Washington, D.C. think that the president has the right to the cabinet he wants. Wrong, bozos! Zip, zap that idea! You don't want to surround any president, whether it's Bill Clinton, who I disagreed with, Lapa was intelligent, or this current moron in the Oval Office, you don't want to surround them with a bunch of yes women and men. That's a dumb idea. And if I got to explain to you why, I worry about your intellect, Mr. and Mrs. Senator. You want them to have a cabinet that is going to be honest, that is going to be capable, that is going to have credibility, and that is going to be able to run the country and not run it into debt, not run it into eternal wars, not run it into an environmental disaster. But by saying that President Bush, for some reason, has the right to the cabinet he wants, is just to say, look, no matter how stupid that guy is, no matter how much he lies, no matter how much he invades nations that don't need invading, destroys the environment, and manana, manana, we'll just keep giving him all these yes women and men. Nowhere in the Constitution, as a matter of fact, it's a constitutional duty of the United States Senate to give advice and consent, not to go, okay, you got it, George. I don't know. We are really lacking in Washington, D.C. There are some people, not all of them. I'm making a general statement. I know there are some exceptions. And I acknowledge that I'm making a general statement. Dave from somewhere in the heights of Northern California, probably sitting out in a marijuana field or something. How you doing, Dave?
Just a few inches in from the Pacific Ocean. Pretty fair, Rama.
Well, I was close. You're in Northern California.
Yeah.
All right.
I, too, am not all that impressed with this White House crew. I suffered through a press conference this morning, however, though, and I was much, much surprised. They had several reporters in there asking questions like as though we had a free press again.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Were they drunk?
Very pointed, direct questions. One asked, do you think paying right-wing talk show people tax money is a good use of our funds? And that was a real question, you know? And that was kind of the tone of what he was getting today.
Now, by the way, while you mentioned that, I want the Bush administration to know they can pay me and I'll be more than happy. All right?
Anyway, for a half a million a year, you'll turn into a right-wing kook?
Well, no, I'll just keep doing the same thing I'm doing, but they can pay me.
Oh, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't want to disappoint you. But
Dave, all right. What else you got going on, then?
Well, you know, for me, to put this story into perspective, it goes way back to the days of PNAC, and that crowd had a plan.
Yep.
It was to shift as much money as possible from the working class and the poor into their own pockets, and any means to do that was justified by that end.
Yep.
They said, we're going to need a new Pearl Harbor to get the people behind us to go in and invade the oil fields of Iraq. And fate should have it, a new Pearl Harbor.
I'll be damned. What happened? Hey.
Well, you know, and it never, never, never could have happened because we have a country with a rapid air defense system that trains every day and they've been in place for years so that if any planes get hijacked, boom, they're coming right at you. So
all
of them had to be ordered to stand down. We have serious psychopaths in this White House. I'm convinced of it.
Well, I don't think, you know, Dave, some people would say you're carrying the descriptions a little too far. I don't think you are sometimes. I look at the results of what people are doing. Forget what they say. You know, a person's actions can either make their words honest or make their words a lie. That's a simple
thing. I wish I could sell Tom on that because he truly believes that these people somehow feel that it's the American way and God has somehow bless them in there.
Well, you know, the definition of a psychopath is the fact that they can't tell right from wrong. They think that even when they're doing wrong, they think it's the right thing. So by that definition, Tom's right too. Damn, he's always right. It's not fair.
Yeah, well, in any event, I don't, words don't, they fail, but they are criminal in extreme measure. These are people that are not beneath rigging election machines, voting machines, and stealing elections. They're certainly not beneath that kind of thing.
All right.
We the people have been taking a major, what's the word I'm groping for under this regime?
We've been ripped off, beat up, stolen from, abused.
Accosted, yes.
You know, and abused, look, the best description for all of this, Dave, and I want to let you go here because, and thank you for the call. Because
thank you.
Yeah,
take care.
Great. I want to keep going, but I think the best description I've ever heard, it's an abusive household. It's like the Bush administration is an abusive, a physically drunk, abusive husband, and the rest of us are the wife. And we just keep batting our little eyes going, oh, he won't do it again tomorrow. He really loves us. I don't know. I wanted to keep going on what I was listening to this morning. I just want to go on through it here. First off, yesterday, I want to thank Minnesota Senator Mark Dayton. I wish I hadn't got a chance to record his statement in the Senate debate. He was up there yesterday. I think he was the first Democrat that got up and spoke. And they hadn't posted it on C-SPAN yet. And unfortunately, I wasn't watching it on my computer site. It wasn't recording it. But Senator Mark Dayton from Minnesota used the lie word for what Condoleezza Rice was doing. Thank you, Senator Mark Dayton. The weirdest. Absolutely. Well, okay. I don't know. All right, Condoleezza Rice. Remember 9/11 Commission? Oh, we didn't think they would fly airplanes into buildings. We never thought they would use airplanes as missiles. Right? That sounds just like her. Which is obviously untrue because just that summer they were in Italy and George Bush had to stay in a boat offshore because they were afraid that somebody is going to run an airplane into the convention center where George Bush was supposed to be in Italy. But, you know, hey, inconvenient facts, forget it. And then, his inauguration, I could give a lot of examples, but a really great one, George Bush's inaugural speech. Sixth sentence in. And I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but what he said was, "And when communism shipwrecked, or the shipwreck of communism came, and then we had a time of relative peace and quiet, and everything was calm, and then there was a day of fire," which means we are not going to keep hearing 9/11, 9/11, 9/11 all the time. We're going to start hearing day of fire, day of fire, day of fire, but that's something to look forward to. Now, George Bush was alluding to the 90s as a time of peace and relaxation, zen with the one of quietness. Now, I don't know what 1990s George W. Bush lived through, but the one I lived through started off with the first Gulf War. Okay, that was peaceful. Sure, first Gulf War was great. After the first Gulf War was Somalia. After Somalia was Haiti, then there was Bosnia, and then there was Kosovo. And that's not to include the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. That's not to include the Murrah Building. That's not to include the two African embassies, the Khobar Towers, or any one of a number of other stuff. It's just, no reality. Or maybe they're just lying. They either believe what they're saying and they really are psychopaths like Dave said, or they're just liars. Well, Kay Bailey Hutchinson gets up on the Senate floor in this wonderful debate over whether or not to appoint the liar, Condoleezza Rice, as Secretary of State. She gets up on the Senate floor, and boy, I wish I had this clip here to play for you. She goes, nobody could foresee suicide bombers in Iraq. Yes, you heard me right. You don't believe me. Go to C-SPAN when they post this stuff up. Or go and read her statement. Kay Bailey Hutchinson gets, we couldn't foresee suicide bombers in Iraq. I'm sorry. What are we paying the U.S. government to do? To protect us? Oh, boy, that's wasted money. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Stick around. You're going to be right back with me, brothers and sisters. And I am going to leave you feeling empowered.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Overfishing off the shores of West Africa leads to overhunting of wildlife on land. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People in West Africa have relied on fishing to put protein in their diets and money in their pocketbooks. But the fisheries off the African coast have been severely depleted. A recent report says the loss of fish at sea has serious consequences for wildlife on land. Justin Brashears is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish stocks off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. He says the fish have been hammered. Brashears says some overfishing can be blamed on small-scale and large-scale operations that are based in Ghana, but more serious problems involve mechanized fleets that carry away huge amounts of fish for processing in Europe. Brashears says people in Ghana have turned to hunting because they don't have fish to eat or sell. Some of the hunting is illegal poaching inside game reserves, and a lot of it is simply unregulated. Brashears says the hunting has become as serious as the overfishing.
The kinds of species that we see declining most are certainly the large carnivores, so things like lion and hyena and leopard, and then many primates like black and white colobus monkeys, and certainly chimpanzees, and then several large, great herbivores like the elephant and hippopotamus. And so these are some of the larger mammals that seem to be struck most powerfully by this trade in wildlife, this consumption of wildlife.
Prasher says the best way to protect those animals is to provide people with other sources of food and to do a better job of managing the commercial fishery. His report was published in November in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Tom will be back for the All Big Three coming up tomorrow. Real quick to plug myself here, by the way, GRRradio.com. That's GRRradio.com. Yeah, stop by, check out the site. I'd appreciate that. And yeah, so would you. You'd appreciate it, too. Okay, real quick, we got one caller on the line. I'm going to get to you, Cecilia, and you're going to have to talk fast because you're going to be getting in the last word here. But I told the chat room I was going to empower them. This is how. I'm not actually going to empower you. I lied. That's right. Call me Condi Rama, okay? That's fine. I can accept that. You're going to empower you. Today's Wednesday. Okay, the other day, Monday. The 24th, I turned in my petitions. I'm going to be on the ballot for school board for Williamstown, okay? This is how you're going to empower yourself. You're not going to sit at home picking your nose going, oh, it's all so horrible. You're going to get out and do something to make your world better. You're going to become active. You're not just going to walk around pissing and moaning about stuff. You are going to go out, become involved in local government, because that's where progressive politics is at its best. That's where progressive politics works. And when the feds come out with really dumb ideas, that's where you get to say, well, I think we just won't do that. Thank you. Okay? That's the empowerment. Get out and become involved. Not just do something, become involved. And if you can't get on a committee, if you can't get elected to something, form a little group and start talking about the issues and bringing them out into the open. Contact a newspaper. Start a newsletter. Do something. Anything. You got to do something. All right. Cecilia from Florida, how you doing? You got the last word, so you better start talking fast.
Okay. Well, congratulations on your endeavor. I wish you luck. And I just have to agree with you about King George. Some of his appointments are just hideous, such as the new appointment for Energy Secretary. And,
yes.
Don't want to bring you down after your wonderful announcement, so I'll just leave it there for now.
Oh, well, no, but that's fine. I mean, we got to keep talking about these things because
right.
We got to know what it is we got.
Well, Mr. Bodeman, who I guess is nominated and is going through, is a chemical engineering professor and chairman of Cabot Corporation, a chemical company.
Yep.
And he has no experience in energy matters. And he's going to sail through. And
he was one of
wonder.
The biggest polluters in Texas, too.
Absolutely. And it's time that we tell our senators to get serious and confirm the right people, not what George wants.
Thanks a lot, Cecilia. You have a great day.
You too.
Be active.
I am.
All right. Bye. All right. Wow. You know, we really are a smart bunch of people. We're smart. We're capable. We know what the heck we're doing, and we know how to do it. We just don't feel like we can do it. We feel like, oh, we're going to get beat down. Get out there. Get active. Do something, because you're worth it. So are your kids. I'm out of here. Rama in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be back tomorrow. Everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage